All right, so we're going to go ahead and get started. Our first speaker is Paul Bartley of North Carolina State University. He's a PhD candidate, and he's going to talk to us about X-ray vision for the future of plant sciences. So, take it away.
Thanks, Dr. Fields. Can everyone hear me okay? Yes. All right, fantastic. Thank you all for being here. As introduced, I will be discussing X-rays and how we've used those to quantify a lot of different characteristics within the horticultural world or realm. I was brought to NC State to work in the horticultural substrates lab, and my job, or should I say my task, was to characterize our various components that we use in substrates and determine how things like particle shape and size influence those characteristics. Perhaps the most difficult part of my job or my task was to determine how these shapes and sizes influence things like irrigation practices, water distribution in the container and retention, and of course plant growth and development. But what I lacked was some transparency. I can't see through the container, I can't see through substrates to see how these particles and the shapes and sizes actually fit together to give these properties and to affect things like plant growth in these peppers. So like any good millennial, I took to Google and I asked for it to describe to me, give me some in situ characterization tools that I can use. And what I found later was that the keyword I was looking for was called tomography. Now you may be more familiar with the medical use of this word in a CAT scan, computer assisted or aided tomography, in which the X-ray source here in the donut rotates around the subject. What I'll be referring to is X-ray microtomography, or micro-CT, which is slightly different. We have an X-ray source on the left here, which emits X-rays through a sample which sits on a rotating table or shelf. And as the sample rotates around, the attenuation values, or the change in the X-ray wavelengths, are detected by a panel in the back of the instrument, and a radiograph is produced. This is your traditional X-ray image. For any given sample, a few thousand radiographs can be produced and combined through a process called tomographic reconstruction. For us, and most of the samples I've conducted, we generally stick with about 2,000 or 2,200 radiographs. And when these are compiled through this process, we can view the sample in two-dimensional slices from the top down, called Z-slices, or from side to side, called X and Y slices. We can combine these slices to then visualize and quantify our material in three dimensions. Now, I think this technique can be very valuable in a number of different assets or facets in horticulture, but for us, I'm going to hit on just three. Three that I've already talked about that were the objectives of my research at NC State. One, substrate characterization. The pore spaces they create, the solids, in fact. Number two, irrigation or water efficiency or distribution within the container. And lastly, plant growth. So let's begin with substrate characterization. Now, in order to start off, literally from ground zero, we knew we had to do a great deal of testing in order to see whether or not our materials or the style that we were scanning them were appropriate for the system. So we scanned a variety of different materials from pine bark to wood fiber, and a number of different resolutions. The greatest resolution, somewhere around 50 microns, and the smallest resolution, or the highest resolution, about 15 microns. All of the images and videos that I'll be showing from the materials side of things will come from the 3-inch cores that you see on the left side of each grouping. Those were scanned at 50 microns. And our results were, well, I was blown away by them, but I might be a little biased. In pine bark, we could clearly see the two different materials which comprise of pine bark. Those are the successions of crushed phloem and the periderm layers that form under them in these layered, almost sandwich-like materials or particles. Peat was very heterogeneous. We see sticks, stems, aggregates of particles, as well as individual small particles. Core, though thought to be very similar to peat, was much more homogeneous, consisting of small, granular, sponge-like particles. And wood fiber is pretty self-explanatory. Long xylem fibers accentuate this material, making it very different than the rest of the materials that we look at. Not only can we visualize these, as I mentioned, in two dimensions and from these Z slices, but we can also look at them in three dimensions. And given the different states of density between air and solids, which is very large, we can separate them into solids and pores. From this, we can characterize both the solids and the pores in terms of volume, volume fraction, surface area, tortuosity, permeability, you name it. There's a number of different analyses that we can run on these digitally once the sample has been rendered. Here we have a pine bark pore matrix, which we were particularly interested in analyzing because the solids were quite difficult to characterize. This pore matrix, as we call it, is entirely connected, which is really the problem that we were struggling with. In order to characterize it, we needed to separate it into individual pore spaces, and then once those pore spaces were separated, we could then analyze them using a pore model network. That characterizes each pore by its body, the spheres that you see, and their limiting dimensions, the pore throats. These are the lines connecting the spheres. This data also gives us the connectivity of each pore model network. Now, while it was very difficult to characterize the solids in each sample, what we could do through this process was essentially fingerprint each material for the characteristic pore network that the particles inherently create. Why do we care so much about pores? Well, it's because of their properties in terms of water distribution and retention that perk our interest so greatly. So now let's continue on to the second part of my discussion, irrigation characterization. Now before I start this video, I want to at least set this up spatially for you. So this is a Z-sliced video. We're going to go starting near the bottom of the container and move further down towards the zone of saturation. And as I play it now, we can see water bridging the spaces in between particles. The black space is air. So as we approach the zone of saturation, you will see much fewer and fewer spaces, or air-filled spaces, air-filled porosity. Here at the bottom of the container, it's very difficult to distinguish the pine bark particles from the water. Why is that? Well, that's because pine bark and its internal porosity absorbed water, and therefore it absorbed the characteristics water has to attenuate or change the X-ray waves, therefore making the two materials, though very different in states of matter, inseparable. That doesn't mean that all is lost in terms of characterizing water within our organic materials. All we have to do is change our approach slightly. So here I have an irrigated container on the left and a non-irrigated container on the right. The graph in between shows air-filled porosity by fraction by container height on the y-axis. And there's a lot of data that we can collect or extract from these two samples. But we're just going to talk about four things, what I call four little snapshots. First, let's start with the non-irrigated container. Letter A. The average porosity of the non-irrigated container was about 40%. Now we know, at least from parameter analysis or particle density work, that the true total porosity was about 83%. Where was the difference? Well, as I mentioned previously, these 3-inch cores were scanned at a resolution of 50 microns. Any pore spaces smaller than 50 microns would be considered, therefore, solids due to their association with the solids around them. These were essentially the internal porosity. So our external to internal porosity ratio was about 40% to 43%, or let's just call it 1-to-1. Letter B, at the bottom of the non-irrigated airspace line, shows a slight trend as we decrease in container height, we decrease in air-filled porosity. That's pretty easy to understand. The materials at the bottom are more compact than the materials at the top. Therefore, the bulk density at the bottom is greater than the bulk density at the top of the container. The difference between the irrigated and non-irrigated lines are the volumetric water content held externally outside the particles, and we can evaluate. What we have is essentially a water release curve or water tension curve from the bottom of the container to the top. So as container height increases, air-filled porosity should also increase, except for one little anomaly at the top of the container, where airspace decreased. I was later able to look at this sample through Z-slices from the top down to see what was occurring in this region where water holding capacity increased where it should have decreased. And what occurred in this section was an increased content in sand, leading to a stratification within the container. Basically, that's a sampling error. In between the scoops, I just scooped from an area that contained more sand than the previous scoop. But probably what you've been looking at since the beginning of this chart was the large amount of water contained at the bottom of the container, something that we call the zone of saturation, which we can now characterize. The zone of saturation here extended from 0 centimeters, the bottom of the container, up to about 22 millimeters or 2.2 centimeters high. While we call it the zone of saturation, the lowest recorded airspace was actually 12%. What this allowed us to do was spatially characterize the distribution of water within the container for this sample at an overhead irrigation application. What we're really excited about in the future is using this technique to view other forms of irrigation or methods of irrigation, such as drip application, overhead, or sub-irrigation, and see how various components distribute these materials throughout the container, not only by height, but side to side. We've talked a lot about relationships, how particles create pore spaces, how pore spaces determine the water-holding characteristics or distribution characteristics of the material. But there's probably no greater interaction in our world than plants and substrates. Now, all of the images that I will be showing in this section come from the geranium that I was able to scan. I've also conducted this method successfully on two other species, onion and tomato. So this technique is viable for a wide range of different crops and different root architectures. In a two-dimensional slice, we could see the stem, so this is a side-to-side slice, we could see the stem of the geranium cutting. I believe this technique is most valuable in our most sensitive stages of plant growth and development, i.e. seed germination or asexual propagation, because we can track the development of this plant all the way from callus tissue formation to root initiation without destructively harvesting this plant. Now let's look at it from a different perspective, and let's add a color palette. So this color palette will view this sample from the most dense material in white to the least dense material, blue, peat. The roots were in orange, and from that we can detect a great deal of anatomical characteristics from the stem, the pith in the center, the vascular cambiums, and the cortex beyond it. We can view this not only in two dimensions in a similar color palette, but also in full three dimensions. Here, the color scheme has changed just slightly, where our most dense material, our vermiculite, is orange. Our roots are teal or green, and our peat is blue. When we have this kind of separation between our different materials or phases, we can then isolate one, such as the roots, and be able to characterize them similarly to the way that we characterize our solids and our pore spaces. We can characterize this root by volume, surface area, and total length by skeletonizing the image. Now you may be asking, how does this differ from traditional two-dimensional data? Well, there's actually been a number of studies conducted in comparing this from two-dimensional data. Generally, we extract fewer roots through this method than we do and manual removal of roots and using a system like WinRhizo. However, where these two methods differ is in two different areas specifically. One, we're completely unable to spatially characterize the distribution of roots within the container. There's no way WinRhizo could tell me that 1/3 of this substrate was completely uninhabited or unpopulated by roots. Why is that? That's something that we would love to know. We can also spatially characterize these radially around the stem or by depth. There's a number of different ways, and the greatest attribute with this technique is we're able to put this geranium back into the greenhouse and continue to analyze it over time. subjecting it to a number of dynamic interactions such as temperature and light, and see how that affects plant growth and development. So in conclusion, yes, we're able to characterize the materials, but perhaps most importantly, characterize the footprint or the fingerprint of their pore spaces and the spaces that they create, and how those influence things like water distribution within the container. And finally, we can look at the most important interactions, which is why we have substrates in the first place, plant growth and development, non-destructively and spatially characterizing these plants in organic substrates. Thank you for your time, and I'll take any questions.
We have time for a quick question, too.
Yes, sir.
Did you calculate or attempt to calculate matrix potential using smallest and largest pore diameter with a comparison of biometric water content?
No, because what I was not able to say during this presentation is that the separation algorithm is very user-controlled. And so there is a great deal of work that needs to be done in comparing that method or the separation algorithms that separate the pore matrix to most accurately separate them to extract the greatest quality data. So right now, that's all user selected, which one looks the best. It has great potential. Yes, Aaron.
Can you clarify what kind of X-ray analysis you're using? Is it nanocomputed tomography or is it like
microcomputed? So our range is approximately 150 microns to single digits, 4, 5, 3 microns, somewhere in there. I don't think we can get 1, 2, or 3, but I think 4 and 5 is our limit. Good question.
All right. Thanks, Paul.
We'll talk later.